5, 4, 3, 2, 1, Bazinga. Hello everybody and welcome back to the 100th episode of the Now Showing podcast. I'm your host, as always, Sam Hoos, and I'm joined once again by my wonderful co-host, Lewis. Hello, Lewis. It's a momentous occasion.
Hello. It is a momentous occasion. Not only is it our return after a long hiatus, it's our 100th episode.
Yes, it's 100th episode. Thank you very much to everyone that's been here over the last 2 years. Two and a little bit years. Thank you very much. Today we're doing another installment of Desert Island DVDs, which we did 2 years ago in August of 2020. Me and JL looked at, we're doing the exact same format today. So it was 3 TV shows and 5 films to take on a desert island with you. In the idea that you've been washed up with a power source TV and a Blu-ray or DVD player. Alongside our 3 TV shows and 5 films, we're also going to be getting a luxury item and a snack. So, before we go into all of that, you might notice that we took a long time to release the last episode. We've also taken a long time to release this episode, actually slightly longer. We've both been very busy. It's in the summer. I've both been very busy with our jobs and uni and traveling and stuff. So this is kind of the off period. We're going to see how much we can kind of get out over the next few weeks. But again, it might be a little bit stunted compared to usual. But hopefully once, September, October comes around, we'll try and get back more into the swing of things, recently trying to release either weekly or fortnightly. Hopefully we'll be able to get a podcast out in the next couple days or so about all the new Marvel stuff that's been announced, and maybe have a little bit of talk about what we've missed, Ms. Marvel, Love of Thunder, that kind of thing. We are going to be here today, of course, doing a little special. 2 years of the podcast, Lewis, pretty much just over a year for you, right? So you've been here for more than half of it. It's not bad, is it? It's a good laugh, isn't it?
It is. It's great. I enjoy it. And it's weird that it's been 2 years. Like, you said 2 years, and then you said August 2020, and I was like, August 2020 was 2 years ago. That is insane. It's gone so quickly.
Oh, yeah, the podcast started in July.
That is crazy. I've been doing it for over a year now, which is even weirder.
Yeah, well, we thought originally we might do Blade Runner again, which was the first episode we did. We'll try and revisit that and re-review it. Of course, you didn't review it last time. That was JL, because he was the co-host at first. But we just think that maybe it'd be a better idea to us to, instead of just talking about a specific film that we talked about before, we guess this is a kind of way for us to talk about our favourite films again. You know, we've done a few of these kind of things, like our favourite genres and stuff like that. I will say that going in, if anyone's listened to the original episode, which obviously came out a long time ago, I believe, I'm not 100% certain, but I believe out of the 5 films I picked, I don't think I've picked a single one of the ones I picked last time. However, I have picked a couple of the shows. So, with that as our as a precursor to my section, let's get into it, shall we? So, let's not waste any fucking time. And we'll start off, Lewis, by asking you. I don't know why I'm asking you, because I should be asking me. But I'll be asking me. So we've got all these films to watch. We've got an unlimited amount of time, stuff in this desert island, to watch all these stupid films over and over and over, and all these TV shows over and over. But we don't want to do it while being hungry, do we?
Of course.
We want to make sure that we have a bit of nutrition behind us. Perhaps not nutrition, actually, especially what I'm going to pick.
Yeah.
but we've got some food behind us, along with the mangoes and stuff we can get from the island. When I'm watching these films, I know it's not the perfect food. I don't absolutely love this food. Like, it's good. Like, I have it more often than the average person, I'm sure. But I just can't picture the cinema experience not being attached to popcorn. I think I picked this last time as well, but it has to be popcorn. I would probably pick toffee popcorn because it's beautiful, but it very quickly gets a bit tiresome. So are you picking the Cineworld, of course, Big up, Cinemod. Half sweet, half salted popcorn. Because it's cinema. How could you not?
That is... Am I moving on to my snack now, yeah?
Yeah.
That is exactly my way of thinking. There are so many foods that I prefer. And there are so many foods that I would rather eat on a desert island. But you can't have a cinema experience, film experience, without popcorn. So yeah, I picked popcorn. I don't like salted popcorn because I don't like salt. So I went with sweet popcorn.
You don't like salt?
No, I don't like salt.
That is weird.
It's just, it's not a nice taste. I don't put it on anything.
That's
like, if
really
it's already
strange.
Got salt in it, then I can eat it. But I don't like put salt on chips or anything like that. Like, I don't salt my food before I eat it.
What?
It just doesn't taste nice.
That's not saying I... Wow.
There are other things I put on food instead.
Let's do an hour podcast on the psychology of you not eating salt.
Well, I eat salt if it's in things because it's an important thing, but I don't like sprinkle it over my food before I eat it. There are other things that I put on my food. Because salt's not very nice. It's very bitter. And
wow.
Just,
well, I will be accepting applications for co-hosts. and with that in mind, it's just like, I don't care at all. That's just psychopathic. But whatever. Okay. So it's good that we're starting off with TV shows because I can get out of the way some of the stuff that is very much obvious and is unchanged from last time. So no one in the world will be surprised to hear that my first pick for my first TV show will be the long-running BBC One show, sci-fi show, Primeval. And then everyone laughed. Doctor Who, of course.
Of course.
Of course, Doctor Who. The only debate is which Doctor Who, of course, because the 60s show to 89, it's not fair to call that the same thing as 2005 and onwards. Last time I picked 2005 and onwards, and this time I'll do the exact same. I'm going to pick 2005 and onwards, especially the first 5 years of Doctor Who, which you've been watching, of course. Which
I have, I've been thoroughly enjoying.
You've been watching the 2005-2010, which is what I love it for. But I think there's greatness in that whole show. You know, it starts off so well with Rusty Davis. It goes for a few years that I'm not such a big fan of, early Matt Smith, but I think Moffat brings it back with some of the stuff he does around the 50th and late Capaldi. And I've found generally, while some of the writing isn't up to scratch, I think that a lot of Jodie's episodes are real little capsules of joy. I think there's some really fun episodes in there. And also Rosa, which is one of the best written episodes of the show ever. So for me, Doctor Who, it's easy. It was never a debate. Doctor Who, it's my favourite piece of media ever. It's my first choice. What's your first TV show?
I did contemplate putting Doctor Who in there, but I thought I've not seen enough of it to commit to it. So my first TV show, which was when I first started making this list, there were only two things, one film and one TV show that was a no-brainer, definitely has to be in it. Everything else took a little bit of thinking. But the first TV show that I couldn't live without if I were on a desert island is Breaking Bad. It's one of the best shows ever made. I think it's the best show ever made. We'll see if Better Call Saul takes that title when it finishes. It's nearly finished. But Breaking Bad, it's perfect. It's long, but if people don't realise that it's only set over a year because it's so excellently paced and so excellently written. The arcs that they go through over this year is unbelievable. Everything about it is perfect. It's just an unbelievably brilliant TV show. And I also very weirdly find it very rewatchable, which is strange because it is a very heavy TV show, but I kind of tend to end up, no matter how many times I say I'm not going to do it or however many other TV shows I have, I always end up rewatching it at least like once a year, which is bizarre, but I genuinely love it that much. It's fantastic. So Breaking Bad, yeah.
I want to make the important distinction, of course. This is probably very obvious, but this is not our three favourite TV shows, our five favourite films, right? This is, just in case anyone knows, this is the stuff that there's a reason why I'd want to have them there, of course. This is all for different emotions and different things. So some of these stuff will be our favourite stuff, but not necessarily. I've not just listed my five favourite films. But I have definitely listed two of my favourite three TV shows at least, because same as last time, the only show that has kind of lived along with me as much as Doctor Who. I've been watching it since I was a kid. I rewatch it all the time. Every time it's on TV, which is often, I always put it on. Never fails to make me laugh. I think I find new things in it all the time. And that is, of course, the 20th Century Fox, originally animated American cartoon, Futurama, originally envisaged by Matt Groening and David S. Cohen and stuff. Of course, it's wonderful. The original four series are probably, you know, the best comedy writing ever. But I think that, unlike The Simpsons, it is very much enjoyable even in the later years. Maybe it doesn't necessarily hold up to the same degree, but I still feel like there are episodes here and there throughout the later seasons that are as good as anything they've made. And also the movies, which I technically count as four episodes each rather than a movie, so I will count them in my box set that I get with me on the island. But the first movie, especially Bender's Big Score, is absolutely exceptional, and anyone that has watched Futurama and hasn't seen anything past the original four series, I strongly recommend watching Bender's Big Score, because it is, for me, the greatest episode of the show. So yeah, Futurama, it'll be definitely fun comedy on the island. And yeah, it's excellent. And also, there's loads of it, so, you know, I have a lot to watch.
Yeah, I had a very similar train of thought, and I'm going to get this one out of the way because I know it's going to annoy you, but there's a lot of it. I find it very funny, very enjoyable.
And, oh no, please don't say this.
It's easy watching. You know what it is. I know you hate it, but I am talking about The Office US. I think it's brilliant. The first series, when they just try and copy the British Office, is a bit shit. But once they find their feet and realise that translating British comedy to America doesn't work, they need to do their own thing. Once they realise that and they get the characters down, it's brilliant. It's really, really good. Especially the first seven series. It falls off after Michael Scott leaves, but it's still good. And there's a lot of it. And the wonderful thing about it is that you get invested in the characters early on. So even when it's not very good, and even when it's very kind of, you're watching it and you're thinking, this has fallen off, even then you can't stop because you're still attached to the characters and you still love them. And it is still funny and I still enjoy it. And it's one of the most easy things to watch. It's one of those shows that you just put on when you're falling asleep or something. You know, me and my girlfriend will be in bed and we'll be like, what should we put on to fall asleep to? And then we'll just put The Office on because it's easy to watch and it's funny. And no matter what episode you put on, you know you're going to have a laugh because it's great.
Now, The Office was, funny enough, on my preliminary list. However, of course, I mean The Proper Office. my third spot, I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted at all. I wasn't sure if I wanted more comedy. I wasn't sure if I wanted what I wanted really at all. And I was thinking The Office, I'm Alan Partridge. There's a few things that was kind of going around my head. But I decided that I've got Doctor Who, which is, you know, not a kid's show. I think it's for all ages, but, you know, obviously a little bit more, it's child-friendly. Yeah. And a few dramas of comedy. I thought, I need something a bit more hard-hitting. And at first I thought maybe Feel Good, because it deals with quite a lot of, you know, important, serious, subject matter. And I sort of praised it very much on the podcast. But instead, I've decided to go for something else that I praised on the podcast a lot. Probably this joint best thing that came out last year. And that'll be Russell T. Davis's, so his second installment on the list, Russell T. Davis's excellent drama, It's a Sin, which is available on, I believe, Netflix and All4, if you haven't seen it. If everyone's not aware of It's a Sin, you've been living under a rock. But it's, yeah, story of a group of gay people going through the 80s. It's a 5-episode long miniseries, each episode taking on different periods, kind of checking in on them during different periods of the 80s. And dealing with how gay people were accepted back then, but also with the AIDS pandemic. Absolutely excellent, absolutely heart-wrenching. Some of the best acted, written, directed content you'll ever see, full stop. So yeah, It's a Sin makes it in for my third spot.
That's great. I'm surprised that it has made it into your spot, because it is very heavy watching. It's not something that I could rewatch, and that was kind of what I was going for, is rewatchability, because if we're stuck on a desert island.
Well, if you think heavy watching won't make it on the list, you've got there's a few things on the list from now on.
That is true. I mean, I have also done some heavy watching. I mean, Breaking Bad is on mine, but I mean, It's a Sin is just six episodes of people dying of AIDS.
My favourite film is famously heavy watching.
That is very true. I do expect that to be there, but I love it, but I am surprised that Sissini's on there, because it is just six episodes of people dying of AIDS, and it's very sad and depressing. But I do get it, because it genuinely is brilliant. It is as good as you say. I went in a different direction. I stuck with kind of rewatchable, enjoyable comedy, easy watching comedy. And I really struggled with this, because I tend to just find a TV show, watch it, and when I love it, I just rewatch it. I struggle to find new TV shows. But I went with Modern Family, which is another comedy that isn't one of my favourites. I don't think it's perfect and brilliant, but there's a lot of it. There are 11 series, I think, and you get attached to the characters, so it's easy to watch. It is funny at times, and it's just a very easy watching, enjoyable comedy series that you can just put on and enjoy. It's not heavy. It's not something that you have to focus on. It's just enjoyable fun, where you get attached to the characters, you get attached to their lives, and you have a lot of fun with it. So that's kind of the trajectory that I went in terms of just watching stuff that's fun and easy and going to have a good time. And that's The Office and Modern Family. And then Breaking Bad is probably my favourite and the best. And that's kind of the dramatic side of it.
I mean, Modern Family would be far from my list, right? So I'd have to, if I got 30 TV shows, it probably wouldn't make it on.
Yeah.
But it is very enjoyable, and I very much am a big fan of the early series, especially. So, I mean, I can understand that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely. Makes sense. Okay, so our three TV shows each are It's a Sin, Futurama, and Doctor Who for me, and The Office US, Breaking Bad, and Modern Family for you. Okay. Moving on to the movies. This is what the big bucks. This is where we make our bread, brother. This is our speciality. And of course, I think I'll get the obvious one out first, like I did with the TV show. Now, this actually was not as obvious as you first may think, because I've kind of organized these into categories for things that I think, okay, I've got different needs on the island, right? And I thought, the elephant in the room, of course, my favourite ever film, the 2020 Australian romance, drama, comedy, whatever you want to call it, coming of age, Baby Teeth. But I thought, Baby Teeth, you know, it does something to me that nothing else can, but I also struggle to think of, you know, I absolutely adore Pablo Lorraine Spencer, and you know I do, and it's one of my favourite films ever, and it very much ticks the same boxes for me emotionally. And you know, so it's very heavy watching. I was like, I can't really imagine having to have both of them in there, because there's definitely a lot of times I wouldn't want to watch either, right? So I was like, I have to pick between those, and that was awfully hard. When I was thinking about something that really that I think is perfect, like those two, something that carries emotional weight, that I'm interested in, that I think is, you know, every single aspect of the filmmaking is on point. I also thought about Whiplash, but ultimately, despite, you know, how perfect Spencer is, how wonderful Whiplash is, nothing I've ever seen, of course, has spoken to me like Baby Teeth. And it was, even though I managed to create a conflict in my own head, it was always inevitable that this would be on the list. I've watched it, you know, a fair few times already. I'll watch it a fair few times more. I've never failed to at least have a tear. And normally I bawl my eyes out every time. Exceptionally acted by all four members of the cast, main members of the cast, Aliza Scanlon, Ben Mendelsohn, Toby Wallace, and Ezzie Davis. Absolutely exceptional. Wonderful directing by Shannon Murphy. Wonderful writing by Shannon Murphy. It does something to me on a level that no other film does. The way that the connections between parenting and drugs and music, it's just wonderful. So yeah, my first pick is, unsurprisingly, Shannon Murphy's 2020 film, Baby Teeth.
Yeah, that is very expected. That's exactly as I expected you to start. And I imagine that while you wouldn't have assumed this would be my first one, it won't be a big surprise to you at all. In the same vein as The Office and Modern Family, but also it genuinely is one of my favourite films ever, and I truly do think it's one of the best films ever. I do not love this ironically. I do not praise this as much as I do ironically. The Lego Batman movie. It is a masterpiece. It's amazing. It's very well animated. It's perfect. And it's got this deep storyline about loneliness and family and finding your family. But it's also incredibly funny. It's one of the funniest films I've seen. It's one of the only films that actually makes me laugh out loud. It's so rewatchable. I genuinely, genuinely love it so much. I cannot imagine being on a desert island without this film. All of the other films that I've picked, I kind of thought, I could get rid of that for something else. I'm just not going to. There's no chance I'm getting rid of the Lego Batman movie. Getting rid of this was never in the question. Absolutely, 100%. It has to be the Lego Batman movie. It's perfect. I love it. It's brilliant. It's genuinely not just one of the best animated films ever, not just one of the best family or kids films ever. I genuinely think it's one of the best films ever made. It is brilliant. It's that good, and I can't imagine a world without it.
Nice. Okay, well, I'm not that surprised by that. Well, as you said, there has to be the light-hearted side, and I say light-hearted, but you know, obviously, I'm going through watching Baby Tooth, bawling my eyes out. I'm going to want some comedy, right? Yeah. So for my second pick, I also went for a comedy, perhaps not one with the same lightness as the Lego Batman movie, but I wanted something that you know tickles me, and I generally have a fairly good, like, dark, not dark humor, because normally people say dark humor just to cover up from being assholes. But I'd say kind of black comedy, I'd say is kind of my stuff. So I was thinking, well, you see, Borat was an initial thought, but then I kind of whittled it around more, and I thought Shaun of the Dead, which is a film that I absolutely adore. It was kind of one of the first times that I watched something and kind of really started appreciating it, kind of in my kind of film education, you know. Went out there and read the script and really paid attention to it and whatever. And I thought, you know, how good the comedy can be. It's not just, you know, some stupid, you know, Adam Sandler or whatever. So Shaun of the Dead was the first one. Doctor Strangelove was the second one, which is the archetypal, you know, builds a lot of what the genre kind of revolves around now, is, you know, very applicable to even modern life, especially poignant back then, with the comments on, you know, the discussion on, you know, the nuclear situation. And that, and also Spike Jonze's Being John Malkovich, which I think, you know, is a fascinating concept, wonderfully done, wonderfully acted, really more funny than most people find it, I think. And it's obviously a really interesting kind of deeper meanings or interpretations that fascinate me as well. And I was really stuck between the three, and I've ended up going for Being John Malkovich. I think the performance is just exceptional. I think Catherine Keener is the one that everyone looks at. She got an Oscar nomination for that role. She probably should have won it. But for me, I think John Malkovich playing himself, it's just you can't look away kind of performance. He's just so wonderful playing. You know, there's no one that the film would have worked for else. You know, that they talk about any interviews with Charlie Kaufman, who wrote it. He says about how at first John Malkovich wanted to produce it, but he didn't want it to be about himself. But the idea is that he's the perfect level of fame and notoriety, especially at that point in 1999, that you couldn't do it. You couldn't do Being Brad Pitt, because it's just too big. It can't be someone that no one knows. It has to be that perfect level of kind of slight obscurity. And yeah, it just works so well. So for me, it's Being John Malkovich, number two.
Yeah, that makes sense. And another one that I'd expect from you, and I imagine my number two is another one that you'd expect from me. Like I say, The Office, Modern Family, Lego Batman movie, as much as I love the Lego Batman movie a lot more than I love The Office and Modern Family, they're all lighthearted, fun stuff to rewatch. But I did have Breaking Bad as well, and I have a very kind of heavy, dramatic film next, and that is Goodfellas, which is another one of my films that I think is one of the best films ever. It's one of my favourite films ever. And it is one of those films that I'm in awe of it constantly. I went to see it a few months ago when Ray Liotta died, and I was just watching it and I was just in awe of how well made it is in every aspect. I mean, the writing is flawless, the directing is flawless, the acting is flawless, everything about it is absolutely perfect. And it's this unbelievably well-told story of this man's fall from grace And it's just one of those films that I can't imagine living without because it's so good. And it's one of the first films I ever saw that really made me love films. I remember when I was a kid as well, my dad put it on one night when my mum was out and was like, this is, we're going to watch a proper film now. We're not going to watch any of your shit. We're going to watch a proper, we're not watching Toy Story for the 50th time. We're watching a proper film. And he put on Goodfellas. And just watching it was like, unlocked something new in my mind about what films could be and about what I loved about them. And yeah, I just can't imagine not being able to watch it. It is, it's perfect. So yeah, Goodfellas. One of the most well-told dramatic stories ever.
Yeah, I battled with Goodfellas. I battled with The Godfather. You know, so those mafia classics. Ultimately, they did lose out to some of the other choices here, but you know, they were very close to mine. But yeah, I understand it. Goodfellas is an absolutely exceptional film. And we talked about it a little bit in the Godfather episode. Yeah. And we have a Goodfellas episode as well. If you go far enough back, it's one of the first episodes, I think it's like third or fourth episode. We talk, me and Jay, I talk about Goodfellas. And I get annoyed because he doesn't like it as much as he should because it's wonderful.
That is sad. And I'm not on that episode, so instantly it's just not as good. But, you know.
Yeah. Next up, for anyone who knows me, and anyone who's the podcast, you'll know that this becomes a problem when I have to pick between 2001 A Space Odyssey and Blade Runner.
Yeah.
That was a choice I have to make. And it's actually a choice that I haven't really made. And I keep thinking by the time that I talk about it, I would have made a decision. So it's two of the best sci-fi films ever. And I think that was the idea that even though there are other sci-fi films I love, Alien, Interstellar, Empire Strikes Back, you know, there's some really great sci-fi films out there that I love dearly. The Matrix, especially the fourth one. But there's something about the grandiose nature of 2001 that attracts me so much. It's the largest scale film ever, from the dawn of humanity to, you know, us making contact with the next species. You know, it has that entire you know, path of humanity within 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Looks beautiful, still looks wonderful today. Best score of all time, harrowing. I mean, it's just wonderful. Some of the most intriguing cinematography, most intriguing writing that you can get, you know, ever. But then Blade Runner is Blade Runner, and I've loved Blade Runner since the first episode of the podcast, which is, I guess, quite important for the podcast itself. It's the 100th episode. It's 100 episodes since we talked about Blade Runner. But yeah, the way the discussion of what it is to be human that is within Blade Runner is something that I still keep coming back to, and the way that it's interpreted, and even the mythos of the film itself with the different versions and the production problems, and you know, the way that Ridley and Harrison Ford disagree on issues about it. There's just so much about Blade Runner. I think wonderful set design, some really intriguing cyberpunk stuff that was very new. That I think, you know, completely mapped the genre out. Vangelis's wonderful score, which has, you know, some of the, you know, Blade Runner blues, and yeah, it's just wonderful. Tears and Rain. I'm going to go for Blade Runner. I'm going to go for Blade Runner.
Fair enough.
It's close to my heart. It's wonderful. I love 2001 with all my heart, but Blade Runner for me. Just that world of being in that 2019 LA, it's just such a trip every time. So I'm gonna go for Blade Runner, specifically the final cut.
Fair enough. Yeah. Again, I expected that one, and my next one is kind of a return to the lighthearted, but also it is another one of my favorite films from my childhood. This is the film that I had on repeat when I was a kid, and that is Toy Story 2. It's a wonderful film. It came out when I was like less than one, so I don't remember it coming out. But I remember growing up with it and watching it all the time and getting attached to the character. I love Buzz and Woody. Buzz is my favourite. He's always been my favourite. And the story of Toy Story 2 is just fantastic. I think it's the last Toy Story film that knew how to use Buzz properly. And like I just said, Buzz is my favourite. And it's just amazing. It was pioneering at the time. I mean, it still is, kind of. It's unbelievable. I love it so much. I grew up with it. Every time I watch it, I feel like a kid again in my bedroom with like Buzz Lightyear bedding and wallpaper and a Buzz Lightyear lampshade. And I just love it so much. I still have my Buzz and Woody toys from when I was a kid. And they're just things that I'm so attached to, I could never get rid of. And Toy Story 2 is another one of those things that I'm so attached to, I could never get rid of. And the whole Toy Story franchise in general, really, I adore the whole franchise. 1, 2, 3, and 4. I think it's one of the only franchises, actually off the top of my head, I think it's the only franchise that has had 4 entries, all of which have been 5 stars to me. They're all perfect. And I understand that I'm very biased towards them, so it's always difficult to pick one. But Toy Story 2 is the one that I grew up with. It's the one that made me love Toy Story. And yeah, it's Toy Story 2. How can you not love it? It's about coming together and helping your friends. And when you're trapped on a desert island, you're deserted on a desert island, what is better than a story about Woody being taken and trapped somewhere and his friends going to help find him? Because that's the power of friendship, and they're toys, and it's just perfect, and I love it so much. So Toy Story 2 is my third film.
Yeah, so I've kind of gone on the same path for my fourth option, which is I was thinking Baby Teeth. You know, the ending is very sad. I talk about it, makes me cry every time. Blade Runner is not a particularly optimistic tale, especially the final cut, which cuts out the ridiculous sunset ending. And Being John Malkovich, despite being a comedy, it has a very mixed ending. It depends what characters you're identifying with, I guess. But ultimately, it's not exactly a everyone's happy in the end kind of finale. So I was like, you know, there's nothing that would really, especially the film-wise, there's nothing that would really cheer me up. So I thought, you know, go back to the childhood classics. Now, last time I did this, I did Shrek. So that was instantly the number one on the list. Okay. I was like, okay, Shrek, specifically the first Shrek. Shrek 2 is almost as good, and I've rewatched that recently, and I thought, you know, a lot of people think it's better, but I think for me, the character of Farquaad and the world he has, the literal little world he has, is just so great that I find it hard to look past Shrek. But I also was thinking about Stuart Little, which I absolutely adored as a kid, and rewatched recently, like in the last couple of days, because it was on telly. So I was like, oh my God, it's so good. But I also thought about superhero films, especially the kind of lighter stuff, you know, not necessarily your Dark Knights and your Batman Begins, but stuff like Into the Spider-Verse, Iron Man 1, you know, Spider-Man 2, that I find, you know, just incredibly endearing.
I thought I had thought the same
but thing. I settled for, I think, a film which does all that, you know, gives you that family vibe, that gives you that that happiness, that sense of childhood, but also is wonderfully written, also does so good to represent the Britain that it was made in, the world it was made in, the drab nature of the reality, the kind of melancholy, but then also the injection of light that was coming in at the time, which is Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory, the 1971 original, starring the excellent, perfect casting of Gene Wilder.
Not
Tim Burton. Not Tim Burton, which is great, which is really good.
Oh, that's called Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, right? Anyway, isn't it?
That's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Excellent film, I think. I think that Depp, for all his problems, is a wonderful Willy Wonka. I think it works great.
Mm.
However, nothing can beat the original.
No.
It takes so long to get in the Chocolate Factory. It's so much build up. But yeah, it has no right to be as scary as it is, but it also has no right to be as funny as it is. Gene Wilder is just, you know, energy in a bottle. So yeah, I absolutely love it. It's wonderful. You know, Roald Dahl's, you know, again, a British institution. So yeah. Come with me. Also, it's got the Candyman in it as well. Not the Sammy Davis Jr. version, of course, but the original Candyman. So that's also a big positive.
It's got the horror, cinematic horror icon Candyman in it.
Yeah, he's got Tony Todd's Candyman in it.
Yeah, that is a good pick. That never crossed my mind, but I would love to take that, but I'm not. I really struggled with the next one. I had three options and I have tried to whittle them down. And I have ended up going with Christopher Nolan's Interstellar, which I really struggled with this one because it was this or 2001, and I picked Interstellar. And as you said at the beginning, that we're not talking about what films we think are better or which films we prefer or anything like that. This is about taking them on a desert island, because I do think 2001 is better than Interstellar. Of course, I do. But Interstellar just does something to me. I just love that film so much. I think, you know, when he made it, he did compare it to 2001 and say he was trying to make a modern 2001. And I think he did. It really is. It's a modern take on 2001 about, you know, 2001 is, like you said, about the journey from, you know, apes to the future of humanity. And that kind of showed the best of humanity. And Interstellar kind of shows the worst of humanity, where everything's gone wrong, we don't have any food, and we're not leaving out of curiosity or exploration, we're leaving out of necessity. We have to go because we've destroyed the planet. And the people that leave, spoiler for Interstellar, they go thinking that they're going to be taking the world with them, and they're going to be the people who take humans to the space, and they're not. They've been lied to, and they'll die in space and they'll never see their families again. And it's one of the saddest films ever. I remember seeing it for the first time in the cinema. It's very sad. It's got an unbelievable soundtrack from Hans Zimmer. One of the best film soundtracks for a sci-fi film ever. It just feels unearthly and ungodly. It's amazing how good it is, that soundtrack. And the direction and the cinematography is flawless. The VFX of this film are truly unbelievable. It's one of the best looking films ever, especially in IMAX. I got to see it in IMAX in 2020 when cinemas reopened. They re-released it and I saw it in IMAX, and it just solidified everything I loved about it, solidified it again. I just love it. I know you don't have this, like, you don't see the love for it, but personally, I think it's Nolan's best.
No, I do see the love for it. I think it's exceptional. Like, I think it's a 10 out of 10 film. I just don't have the emotional connection
to
it.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, you don't see the emotional connection to it. You don't have that. But yeah, you know, it is, I think it's Nolan's best. I think it's absolutely flawless. It's a heartbreaking film. It does kind of go off the rails a bit at the end in the bookcase scene, but it still makes sense. It still keeps you tethered to the reality that the film holds. It's not very confusing, and it is probably Nolan's most human film. And the reunion that they have at the end, Matthew McConaughey and Jessica Chastain's character Murph, who's played by, is it Ellen Burstyn? I want to say it's Ellen Burstyn, but I'm like 95% sure it's not. But anyway, Matthew McConaughey's character and his daughter, it's so sad, but it's so uplifting, the moment that they have, and he sets out into the stars again. And it's just, it's one of the most optimistic endings to a really pessimistic film. And it is, it's absolutely fantastic. And another one, you know, Goodfellas, I said it's one of the first films I saw that made me love films, and Interstellar is as well. It's one of those films that I watched when I was young. It came out in 2014. I watched it opening day. I was dead excited for it. Me and my girlfriend went to see it. And we went to see it, and I just remember watching it on the big screen and being like, films, they're not just pictures that move. They're so much more than that. And Interstellar kind of showed me that, and I can't imagine not being able to see it.
They're not just pictures that move. They have sound too.
That's very true, yeah. That's all they are.
They have sound too.
They're moving pictures with sound.
Basically, that is true. You are right. Okay, moving on to my last choice. Now this again, I wasn't even sure what category to go for, but I thought essentially I am a film fan, right? I think that's
really
clear. I am a film fan, but I'm also a horror fan. So I thought sometimes this island, I want to get scared shitless. I want to be terrified to walk into the jungle. I want to be terrified of chewing on my popcorn. But the problem with this one is that this had the longest shortlist of any of the categories I wrote. You know, I've been discussing it before everything. I've been coming up with this being longest. I want to just tell you the shortlist, okay?
Okay.
This is in no particular order.
Is this of the horror films or just is all of them?
Horror films. So this is just the horror film shortlist. And I'm not going to tell you which one. No particular order. Scream, Halloween, Get Out, Psycho, The Exorcist, Alien, American Psycho, Saint Maud, The Shining. That's the shortlist.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's a category. I mean, that's more than five films in itself. That's like 10 films. They're all great, and I can't go through all of them in depth because, you know, there are so many films. But, you know, it will hurt to exclude Get Out because, you know, it's one of the best psychological horrors ever, and it's obviously I love the way that it you know discusses racism, not from only a right wing perspective but from a liberal perspective. I think Saint Maud is fascinating, and I think it's a really, especially it's one of those films that is so much better in retrospect once you've seen the ending. Once you've really got to sit with the film, you know, you get to look back and think just how great it was. But the conversation comes down to The Shining or Psycho. Ultimately, despite the fact that even though he's, I think, the greatest director of all time and have directed so many of my favourite films ever, once again, I'm picking someone over Kubrick because I was debating about whether 2001 or Blade Runner. I was debating Dr. Strangelove or being John Malkovich. And I'm debating Psycho or The Shining. The Psycho or Shining.
The
Psycho. Nice. The Shining or Psycho. Ultimately, I am going to go for Psycho as my fifth pick. Even though the last scene is some of the most unnecessary, over descriptive, flumpy, chunky bits of exposition ever. The first, however long, the first 2 hours of the film are just wonderful. The slow build up, the getting to know a character that ultimately turns out to not be the main focus of the film, which I guess was probably quite revolutionary at the time as well.
Yeah.
The infamous shower scene, the haunting score, the locations, everything. It's just an absolute, tour de force in how to write gripping, terrifying, and character-driven horror. But it all boils down, really, to me, to quite possibly up there with the greatest acting performances in history, up there with anything ever, might be the best, and Anthony Perkins playing the famous horror icon that is Norman Bates, of Bates Motel fame. no, honestly, just... You know, you talk about can't look away. You know, I say can't look away. Jeff Goldblum, you can't look away. You know, there is no one more gripping than Anthony Perkins in that role. But every single line, you're just waiting for the terrifying conclusion to every sentence. The creepy, wonderful half space that he lives in between kind of being a believable, conversational human being, but also just knowing that there's something behind the facade, something wrong. And the further you go down that rabbit hole, the more you appreciate just the wonderful insanity that he managed to portray in that kind of two-faceted character. So for me, my fifth choice of the day is Psycho.
I'm so shocked that you went with Psycho, but I'm so happy that you went with Psycho. Over all of the horror films in the world, you went with Psycho. I'm so happy with that. I didn't pick Psycho. I didn't pick a horror film, obviously, although I do love Psycho.
That's a surprise.
I know, yeah. My last pick is a return to the fun. It's a return to The Office and Lego Batman and Toy Story. And this is a film that I will say is not good. This is not a very well-made film. However, it's one of the most fun things I've ever experienced in my life. And that is the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Daniel Espinosa's Morbius.
Yes, I'm picking Morbius. Five times. I don't need four other films.
Let's
Morbius. No, I am picking the Rocky Horror Picture Show because, it 1972, it's not very good. It's made on a horribly tiny budget. It's very weird, but it's one of the most fun things ever. It holds the record for the longest cinematic exhibition in history. It's never left cinemas. Even during the pandemic, cinemas played it to empty theatres so it wouldn't lose the record, because it genuinely is. It's a staple of culture, especially queer culture. It's one of the most important queer films ever made, which is weird because it is quite problematic, actually, to a modern eye. But it's one of those things where it's so beloved that you just don't care. It's fantastic. Tim Curry gives one of the most captivating performances I've ever seen. I mean, you're talking about Anthony Perkins in Psycho and not being able to take your eyes off him. Watch Tim Curry in this film. It's one of the most engaging performances ever. You know, Rocky Horror Picture Show has been done and done about 1,000 times by 1,000 different casts. No one will ever do Frankenfurter like Tim Curry. He has the charisma to do this performance like no one else. He doesn't show up in this film for about 25 minutes, but he is the start of the film. When he walks in, that's when the film starts. And it's one of the most unbelievable experiences I've ever had. It's very interactive. It's one of the few films where you go to the cinema to watch. I saw it in the cinema, which is amazing in and of itself, but I saw it was packed, it was full, people were dressed up like Frankenfurter, people had outfits on, because it's one of those interactive experiences. People were shouting at the screen, people were laughing and singing along, and it genuinely, it's one of the most fun things ever. And it's got a great soundtrack, great music. And it's also, it's very, very sad at times, but overall, mostly, it's ridiculous, it's camp, it's hilarious, and it's absolute, it's a ball of a film. And if you haven't seen it, please go and see it. Please try and watch it in a cinema, because like I say, it has never left cinemas, and it hopefully never will, because it's amazing. In fact, it's never left cinemas. Disney have the rights to it now, since they bought Fox. And they have pulled all of Fox's films from cinemas. And this is the one film that has survived Disney's axing of theatrical exhibition for Fox. Because if they took this from cinemas, there would be riots. Because people love this film. It's important and it needs to stay, regardless of how bad it actually is. It's so much fun and it has to be seen by everyone. It's just brilliant, and I can't imagine.
I can't think of anything worse than a cinema full of people seeing Rocky Horror. Personally,
that's because you're like a bigot to me. That's because you're a bigot.
This is really cheesy. I mean, I could probably do it for Grease, but like anything else, I don't know. Even like musicals I liked, that would be a challenge.
It is bad. That's the weird thing. It is quite bad. It's not good. It's one of those things where...
I think I've said this on the podcast before, but when Wacko Jacko died, they showed his This Is It in cinemas.
Mm.
And I remember going, and, you know, big Michael Jackson fan, mum's a big Michael Jackson fan. And one woman in the audience seemed to think it was a sing-along. No one else did. And was singing along, and it was really, really embarrassing and really cheesy. And we were like, oh god. And she was like, hum along to the tunes. Yeah, that's rough.
But yeah, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, it's not like anything else you'll ever see. It's an experience that needs to be had. Go and see it, please. It's brilliant.
Okay, so our five choices for... Well, I'll go for my five choices for films were... In the order I listed them were Baby Teeth, Being John Malkovich, Blade Runner, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and Psycho. So, what were your five?
My five films were The Lego Batman Movie, Goodfellas, Toy Story 2, Interstellar, and The Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay, very nice stuff. So, give me, what is your luxury item, Lewis?
I didn't really know what you meant by luxury item, so I don't know if I've just gone completely out on this, but I just had my phone.
I don't think you can use your phone.
Well, obviously, I don't mean, like, to call people for help, but, like, I mean, like, access to the internet and stuff, where I wouldn't be able to stream
things. I don't think you can access the internet. I on actual Desert Island Discs, they say one luxury item, but I don't think you're allowed to use anything that could, like, contact stuff. I don't think, like, you can use the internet. I think that seems a little bit over the OTT.
Okay, fair enough. What's yours, then?
Well, last time I went for my Mesut Ozil shirt.
Okay, that is different from a phone.
But this... Yeah. I remember Ricky Gervais picked infinite vat of Novocaine, or like a thing, which I thought was an interesting choice. I am also still kind of debating this. I think I am going to go with a fully stocked iPod. Because I feel like a phone is too much, but an iPod is just music. So a fully stocked Zune, the failed Windows competitor. So and I could have all my indie bangers and all my Kendrick and listen to that for eternity, chilling on the beach.
It's kind of true. And that was kind of my thinking with my phone, where I could have all my pictures and songs and everything on my phone. But I will pick something different, because now I feel like I'm copying you. And I'm going to go with something simple. I'm going to take my pillow, my favourite pillow. I have a favourite pillow.
That's a great choice.
And if I have to sleep on the floor of a desert island, I will need something comfortable. And I'd love a pillow, so I'm going to take my favourite pillow.
And along with the rules of Desert Island Discs, which have no affiliation and I don't think we can technically be sued, so it's fine. According to the rules of Desert Island Discs, we also get the complete works of Shakespeare and all religious texts as well. So,
oh, the Shakespeare, that is nice. I do like a bit of Shakespeare. So yeah, the complete works of Shakespeare, that's great.
What is the definition of all religious texts? Like, does it count like really tiny like cults out in like...
Well, I was just thinking that. Isn't Jedi an officially recognised religion? So does that mean we'd get copies of Star Wars?
No, we'd get copies of like... an in-universe Jedi handbook.
Right, that's a bit shit.
Like
then.
Some that they've made, because they probably released all of those already, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's true.
So we probably get like a shitty like coffee table book that came out in like 2007.
Yeah, I'm not too bothered about the religious texts, but I'm happy about the Shakespeare.
Yeah, but there could be some really cool religions you've not heard of.
I suppose that's true, yeah.
Maybe they're right. Okay, so that wraps up our 100th episode Desert Ooh. Island DVDs special. Wow, 100 episodes and we're still doing this shit, are we?
Here's to 100
this
more.
this far down the line. Here's to 100 here's to 100 more. By that point we need at least one sponsor, please.
Yeah.
If you're a sponsor, of course, you can contact the podcast at nowashamedpod@gmail.com. But yeah, thank you very much, everyone listening, honestly. Not in like an outro-y thank you very much, everyone listening, but like a general thank you very much, especially over the last few months, which we really appreciate the uptick in listenership. And we've obviously talked about that every podcast, but obviously it means a lot and, really gives us more kind of motive to keep making these. Of course, we've not been as consistent as we've liked, but again, life gets in the way. We've been very busy. It's just been, summer's been packed for both of us, but we are going to try and get content out. We're trying to be doing an episode on Doctor Who next week, and perhaps an episode of Marvel this week if everything goes right. But really, honestly, thank you very much for this thing. It's been great. We don't care if we were talking to one person. It's been a real good laugh doing this over the last 2 years, and it's been a big part of our lives since lockdown. I appreciate one of the best things about it is a lot of my favorite films I probably would never have watched if it wasn't for doing this. So honestly, thank you very much to everyone. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Yeah, thank you very much. It is strange that people actually wanted to listen to us. I love getting together with you weekly and talking about films, or monthly for the past 2 months, but hopefully we'll be back to something more regular soon. But yeah, I love talking about films and having someone to talk about them with, and some people to talk to.
Oh, you're in luck, aren't you?
Yeah, and people to talk to as well, because people actually listen to us for some reason, which is very nice. So thank you very, very much. Keep listening, keep telling your friends and family about us, because we'll still make it even if no one listened. But it's nice when people do listen.
And honestly, watch The Railway Children Return in cinemas now. Okay.
We didn't do it while we watched, did we?
No, because this is a special. We never do this.
Right, yeah, of course.
Come on now, mate.
I've not been here for 100 episodes. I've only been here for half of it. Sorry, I'm not used to it.
That is true. Well, you wouldn't... Well, I haven't seen The Railway Children Return, but I'm sure it's great. I have seen Where the Crawdads Sing.
As have I.
Okay, so...
I went to see it last night with solely... Okay. Because I wanted to see the Oppenheimer trailer. And it didn't play!
You absolute dweeb.
It didn't play.
It did in front of mine, actually. It played in front of my Crawdads.
It's been released officially now. While we've been recording this, they've released it.
What did you think of Crawdads?
I thought it was shit.
everyone thinks it's shit. I thought it was good.
It's one of the cheesiest scripts ever. This person who's never been able to read.
There were a few cheesy moments. I'll admit there were a few cheesy moments.
This person who's never been able to read. She says some of the most poetic things ever. She can't read. This woman cannot read or write. And then she turns around.
Wow. I hate poor people.
No, I'm just saying she can't read. My job is to teach adults to read and write, so I understand this. But she can't read. Yeah. She's never read anything in her life. She reads one sentence and she says, wow. I didn't know that words could hold so much meaning. And it's like, you've never been able to read. You've been fishing for mussels all of your life. You wouldn't say that.
She knows how to speak.
No, but that's a very poetic thing to say. No one would say that.
Poetry doesn't have to be written down. You have to read to be poetic.
No one would say that. Especially because she can still hear.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's fine. Honestly, it's fine. I guess I like the film because I don't hate poor people. So for me, it was fine. I thought that it looked wonderful.
It did look wonderful.
The locations were beautiful.
There were a few green screens that were horrific, but it was.
They didn't really use many of them though. I thought the acting was very good. I thought the Daisy Edgar Jones was great. She's always great, of course.
Yeah.
David Chathairn was good. I think some of the male co-stars weren't so good, but I thought that she was. I thought it was okay. Some of the script wasn't wonderful, but and some of the kind of plot points I thought were kind of predictable, but I was very engaged. And I enjoy the characters. I like a slow character in drama. And I appreciate the time we got to spend with them. So I personally thought Crawdads was a lot better than people make it out to be. I do understand the flaws, but I thought it was good.
I thought it was very thoroughly boring.
I hate poor people.
I do know.
Yeah.
Say that one line made me laugh. Honestly. Because she's never read anything in her life. She's never read it. And then she comes out with this incredibly poetic line. And she does it throughout as well. Several times she says things incredibly poetic.
She's smart. She doesn't have to be able to read to be smart.
No, but she's
Lewis.
Not smart at the beginning. That's the point. She's smart by the end.
She is smart.
Not at the beginning.
No. She's smart. She just doesn't have a way to apply it.
Well, yeah, she has that. And she's very swamp smart. Like, she knows all of the nature.
She's very swamp smart.
Yeah. But she says incredibly poetic things, and it's very boring. There are far too many flashbacks. The court case was much more engaging. And it was only like 5 minutes of screen time.
You can find Lewis on Twitter.
The trailer made it seem like we were getting an interesting murder mystery.
Lewis
LJWR
on Twitter.
And it was some shitty, boring rom-com. Not a com, it was just a rom.
And you can find me on Twitter at SamHMedia. And you can find the podcast at NowShamePod. We are proud to be members of the Music City Drive-In Network. You can find them at MCDiPod or Music City Drive-In on the website for a host of podcasts, articles, and more about the likes of music, film, and sport. If you enjoy the podcast, the best thing you can do to help the podcast grow is by giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes or Spotify.
Apple Podcasts.
Or Apple, or whatever. Or Google Play, wherever you eat podcasts. We greatly appreciate it. It helps us get up in the rankings and tell your friends about the podcast. And you can find us on Letterboxd at Sam Houston and LJWR, respectively. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you all next time. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.